Christ is risen.
Truly, he is risen.
What a terrifying idea. What a terrifying idea. A terrifying reality that you go to the tomb of your beloved friend, of someone you have lived with and traveled with, you have hosted in your home, you have eaten with, you have walked the dusty streets of your land with, you have gotten in trouble with. What a terrifying idea to go to his tomb to do the last thing that you can do for him. Anoint his body, clean it, wash it, dress it with oils, smooth the skin for the last time, arrange the burial cloths so that he can die in dignity, in beauty. What a terrifying reality to go hoping to perform these last rites with your friend and have him gone. Have him gone and some young man sitting there off to the side saying, well, he's gone. Look, there's where he laid him and it's empty. Perhaps the cloths strewn around, unwound, tangled in a pile. We think as Christians that we should be delighted about the resurrection. We think that this is a moment of joy. And yet it is also a moment of terror. It is easier to know what is before you, to be sure of the grief that is before you, to know that things are probably not going to work out as you secretly hope. It's just easier. I think living in hopelessness is actually something we as human beings, we do really well. One of the things that is true is that we more frequently retell and share the stories of terrible things that have happened to us or friends around us than we do positive. How many of you have been pregnant and have had somebody share the story of some horrible pregnancy? As if that's what you need when you're carrying a child, a new life. And yet it happens all the time. I ride my bike around Portland and I have a friend who every time I mention that, makes sure to remind me of the number of people she knows who have been doored by a car door as they've been riding down a bike lane, as if I need to know that. And when I lived in Boston and she shared these stories, and Boston is a truly terrifying city in which to ride your bike, I just thought, this is not helping me. And yet that's what we do. We share the stories of things that go wrong so much more often than we share our stories of delight. And I don't think that that's because we love the stories of disaster, but it's because that feeling of hopelessness and frustration is so familiar to us. And it's actually kind of a safe feeling because so much around us seems like it is getting worse. There is a kind of dark juxtaposition today. Today we celebrate this resurrection and we also celebrate the martyrdom of Martin Luther King Jr. This is the day on which he died, on which he was martyred. And I use that word martyr intentionally. He wasn't just killed. He wasn't just randomly shot or intentionally shot by the police. He was intentionally killed because he had lived a life where he constantly stood up and spoke out against that which was wrong, whether it was race, whether it was the war in Southeast Asia, whether it was speaking on behalf of sanitation workers. He was an unpopular man in his lifetime. I think we forget that. We forget just how unpopular he was. And it is not just white people who forget that. Black people forget that too. Not everybody was excited about what Martin Luther King was doing, much less what Huey Long was doing. Martin Luther King called people out. He called white people out of their comfort zones. He called white people to account for their racism. And he called Black people out of a comfort zone where they had figured out to work a system that worked against them, but they had managed to kind of survive it. If they just kept their heads down and didn't bother to disrupt lunch counters or sit in the wrong seat on a bus, you know, maybe it was okay. It wasn't really okay, but maybe they would just survive. And Martin Luther King called people out of that discomfort, out of their complacency, into a life of discomfort and challenge, of resistance. And he died. He was killed as a result of his actions. His actions on behalf of those all around him. And Jesus was killed for the same reason. These women who went to the tomb to be with their friend had walked with him and gotten in trouble with him. The kind of good trouble that gets attention. The kind of good trouble that results in somebody walking again. The good trouble that results in people being welcome at a table where indeed the wine is well aged and it is sifted of all those impurities. The kind of wine that you put in a goblet and you swirl around and it appropriately dribbles down the side. That's the kind of wine that Jesus offered to people all around. And not everybody wants to share that wine, right? Most of us, we keep that good wine for just our friends, for just the people we love. And Jesus just spread it out, profligate with wine, profligate with food, with love and compassion and healing. And it challenged the status quo. It made Jews who were comfortable with a Roman regime uncomfortable because he was getting attention and drawing crowds. It made the Romans uncomfortable because crowds were being drawn, and these Jewish people, they were a rebellious people, constantly rising up and having to be put down violently. Jesus died because he insisted on facing the hopelessness of the world around us and standing in solidarity, standing together with those who suffered. And he calls people all the time in this Gospel of Mark to the kind of faith that stands with people. It doesn't avoid suffering, it enters into it. And it, in the midst of that suffering, creates joy and hope and companionship and friendship. Jesus created kin wherever he went. Jesus created a world of kinfolk. And then he died. He died a brutal, horrible death on a cross, the most violent form of execution the Roman Empire could institute, intentionally meant to terrorize people. Not everybody died on a cross, only those that Rome thought were the most dangerous. Because if we're afraid of dying that way, maybe we won't do the things that threaten the powers that be, that turn the world over, that challenge whether violence is actually the answer. And Jesus's friends, they watched that death, and most of them deserted. Most of them fled. His closest disciple, Peter, his closest one, the one who most enthusiastically followed Jesus, denied him 3 times as he was on trial. Only the women stayed. The women and one disciple. Probably because they had the least to lose. When you're at the bottom, you don't have anything more to lose. And so you stay And you do the small thing that you can do. You go to the place where he has been laid out and you prepare his body. You touch it. You put oil on it. You arrange it in death so that it has the beauty of his life. How terrifying to show up in that moment and to realize that death is not the end. To realize that all of those things that Jesus said, all of those promises that he made, all of the ways he echoed the hope of the Jewish people might actually be true. Hope is terrifying. Hope is terrifying because it calls us out of our complacency. It calls us to tell a different story, a story that's not cool. It's not hipster, it's not sophisticated, it's not properly cynical. To tell a story of God working in our lives, of God slowly but surely changing the world around us through us, so that the world is a place of hope, of mercy, of real justice, of love. Hope is terrifying. Let us live in hope. Amen.